In today's gospel, Christ performs his first sign at the wedding of Cana. The Lord be with you.
And with your spirit.
A reading from the Holy Gospel according to John.
Glory to you, O Lord.
There was a wedding in Cana at Galilee, and the mother of Jesus was there. Jesus and his disciples were also invited to the wedding. When the wine ran short, the mother of Jesus said to him, "They have no wine." And Jesus said to her, "Woman, how does your concern affect me? My hour has not yet come." His mother said to the servers, "Do whatever he tells you." Now there were 6 stone water jars there for Jewish ceremonial washings, each holding 20 to 30 gallons. Jesus told them, "Fill the jars with water." So they filled them to the brim. Then he told them, "Draw some out now and take it to the head waiter." So they took it. And when the head waiter tasted the water that had become wine, without knowing where it came from, although the servers who had drawn the water knew, the head waiter called the bridegroom and said to him, "Everyone serves the good wine first, and then, when people have drunk freely, an inferior one. But you have kept the good wine until now." Jesus did this as the beginning of his signs at Cana in Galilee, and so revealed his glory. And his disciples began to believe in him. The Gospel of the Lord.
Praise to you, Lord Jesus Christ. Some years ago now, there was a movie that won the Academy Award that year for Best Film. It was entitled American Beauty. You still see it on some of the movie channels. In fact, I went by it the other day again. It tells the story of 2 very dysfunctional families living in suburbia. And in one of the families, there's a young girl, probably 18, 19 years old, who's very beautiful. She just is gorgeous. And she depends on the admiration of young men for her own self-worth. Their praise of her beauty gives her her sense of value. And in one scene, she says to a close friend of hers, she says, "The worst thing in life would be just to be ordinary. The one thing I never want to be is just ordinary." I wonder whether you and I tend to feel the same way about our lives. Is ordinariness a curse? You know, some of you are familiar with National Public Radio, the wonderful series that Garrison Keillor has. He's created a fictional village up in the wilds of Minnesota that he calls Lake Wobegon. Lake Wobegon is populated by all kinds of interesting characters. But according to Garrison Keillor, the residents of Lake Wobegon, all the men are hardy, all the women are pretty, and all the children are above average. Nobody ordinary there. There was a survey taken a few years ago where people in this country were asked to rate themselves in terms of their intelligence. What did they consider their intelligence to be? And interestingly, 80% of the people who took the survey, 80% of them rated their intelligence above average. Now, if 80% are above average, does that mean there's no average? You see, I think we're sold in our country, maybe in the first world, this myth that you've got to be superior. You can't just be ordinary. You've got to be more than ordinary. And yet, and here's the point, what if God is very comfortable with the ordinary? What if the ordinary is where God does his work? If you and I are uncomfortable with the ordinary, then would we risk missing God, who does his work in the ordinary? Just a perfect example of that we see in the gospel today. We're all familiar with this wonderful incident where Christ, we're told, performs the first of his signs at this wedding in Cana. But let's look at that for a minute. First of all, the little village of Cana. Cana was what we would call a backwater village. Tiny little place, didn't stand out for anything. Just an ordinary little town. And the residents of that town were not among the glitterati, so to speak, of Galilee. They were just hardworking, simple, ordinary people. And then, a wedding. What's more ordinary than a wedding? Now, I mean, every wedding is special in its own way, but how many weddings take place in a year, for example, even in our own state? You look at the papers, you know, especially in June or in October, how many weddings take place at that time of year? It's very ordinary to have weddings. I mean, how many weddings do you think were taking place in Galilee at that time? Just an ordinary wedding. An ordinary town, ordinary people, an ordinary young couple, just a normal, everyday wedding. And besides that, the reason that Jesus does this miracle is the most mundane of all reasons. Why did he do it? Because they were running out of wine. He didn't do it for some great salvific purpose at that particular point. Now, there is a salvific purpose as a byproduct, because we're told that his disciples begin to believe in him. But that's not the reason he does the miracle, the sign. Why does he do it? Simply because they're running out of wine. And in those days, you know, in those days when a wedding took place, weddings lasted 3 or 4 days. The celebration lasted 4 or 5 days. And when you had a wedding and you invited guests, it was your duty to be hospitable to the guests. And if you ran out of wine, that was really a very embarrassing situation. So he performs this miracle in a little ordinary town for ordinary people, for an ordinary event, for a very simple reason, to prevent them from being embarrassed. What could be more ordinary than that? And what does that tell us about the way God works? See, God works in the ordinary, in the everyday, in the average. He doesn't work just in some great moment, someplace. You know, if we're looking for lightning bolts to come crashing down from the sky, we're going to miss where God works, because God works every single day for salvation, for your salvation and mine, in the ordinary things of every day. We have to look for him there. That's where he is, in the ordinary. I mean, imagine, for example, a housewife preparing the evening meal for her family. What's more ordinary than that? But when that meal is prepared, as it always is, out of love for her family, and her family sitting around the table experiences their love for one another, isn't God present there? Or imagine you're at work, and somebody at work comes to you and they begin pouring out their heart to you, they got a problem, you listen to them very patiently, maybe you offer them a little advice. Isn't God working there in your concern for that person? Or imagine a parent putting a child to bed. A little story time, a little prayer time, tuck him in bed, kiss him. Isn't that very ordinary moment a time when that child learns to experience God's love for him or her through the love of the parents? What could be more ordinary than that? But isn't God at work there? See, God is very comfortable with the ordinary. That's where God does his best work. That's where God saves us. Every day, in the ordinary, average things, that's where God saves us. So maybe today it would be worthwhile us thinking something like this. In fact, I should mention in closing one final little thing. I was talking to a family not long ago about what they had done last summer, and they were telling me that they had taken their children to a petting zoo. You know, one of those little petting farms they have around. And this particular place, I forget where it was now, they told me, but this place had some very exotic types of animals there, little animals. They had a baby llama. They had a baby zebra. They had several other rather, you know, exotic animals. But their little boy, a little boy named Jeffy, guess the animal he wanted to pet. He wasn't attracted by the llama, the extraordinary. He wasn't attracted by the little baby zebra. You know what he wanted to pet? The barnyard goat. There was a goat there, a little baby goat. That's what he wanted to go pet, the goat. Never mind the other stuff. See, again, the ordinary. So here's the point for us to think about today, maybe, as we think about how Christ worked in the ordinary there at Cana. If everyday ordinary water at the hands of Christ can become wine, and if everyday bread and wine at the hands of Christ can become his own body and blood in which he gives himself to us, then what could happen to everyday ordinary lives at his hands? What could happen to your everyday ordinary life at his hands? Or maybe we should put it another way. When Christ is present, nothing is ordinary, because that's where he's working salvation for you and for me. May God bless you.